Welcome to the Intentional Parenting Podcast. My name is France Taillard. I am a mom and parenting coach. I coach moms how to consciously parent their child and re-parent themselves using human design and other tools. Each week, I bring you a message to guide you on this journey we call parenting. Why? Because it is one of my biggest skills and talents in life as a 3-5 splenic projector is to be a problem solver. I experience many different things and situations, and I use that experience to guide you to find creative solutions to your challenges. My goal is to guide you to experience a deep, authentic connection with yourself and your child. Thank you for spending some time with me today. Hello, and welcome back to today's episode. Today we have Dr. Lisa joining us again for part two. So if you missed part one, it is very interesting. We learn about all the myths that we've been told about our period, the lack of education we have around it. And it's just a very educational conversation. So if you missed that, I would highly encourage you to go back and listen. Today, we're going to dive deeper into different topics of our hormonal health. So I want to ask you, so welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Of course. So I want to tap into a little bit how in understanding how we can tap into our hormonal cycles or our moon cycles to be more productive and effective with our time and energy. So I know that for me, when I started doing that, it blew my mind on how, like, instead of like having my to-do list every day and like whatever, doing things that I didn't really want to do, I switched it and I would, you know, finish projects, you know, the week before starting my period, and it would just be so like effortless. So talk to us a little bit about that, about, you know, what it is like, how we can be more productive and effective with that.
For sure. Yeah. So it's no coincidence that the moon cycle is approximately 28 days, as is our menstrual cycle, right? Everybody's a little bit different. But if we lived in a world where we weren't exposed to artificial light, we were, you know, living under the moon, we were going to bed when the sun set, woke up when the sun rose, then we would follow the rhythm of the moon with our period. So typically then you would get your period on the new moon where you get your flow and you'd ovulate on the full moon. So, you know, you think full moon, everything's a little bit wonky, you know, things are going a little awry. Well, when we're ovulating, we feel a little more, you know, frisky, we're at our peak fertility, so we're more social, but typically that's how our cycles would go. And in traditional cultures, when we lived all together and supported each other, the women would be together, their cycles would be in sync too, because we know when you're around other women, your cycle can become in sync with them. But right now we do live in a world where we have artificial light, we live indoors, but we do have a 28 day cycle. And everybody can tap into the strengths of different times of the month. So when we get our period, this is the, you know, if you're following the moon cycle, it's the new moon time, but you can think about it like the winter. Each phase or week of the 4-week menstrual cycle can be related to a season. So when you get your period, it's like winter time. What do you want to do in winter? You want to retreat. You want to rest. You don't really want to be social. It's a good time to start planning for the month. Now, you don't really want to take on anything too big, but start the ball rolling of your to-do list or what you're going to focus on for the month. You don't want to push it too hard with exercise, and you want to get a lot of blood building foods in, like, you know, good sources of iron, you know, some fish, sardines, oysters, beets, etc. So that's the first week of the cycle. That's called the menstrual phase. And then from day 7 of your cycle to ovulation, so day 1 we call the, you know, the first day of flow. So the second week of your cycle, this is moving into the spring, right? So your energy is starting to increase. Your hormones are starting to increase because they drop when you get your period. They start to increase and they're going to be at their highest right around ovulation. So they're building up over this second week. And this is a time where you're going to feel the most magnetic and social, where you're going to want to plan your, you know, presentations, your work meetings, and ask for that raise. And this is a time where you're going to be more, you know, getting more gains from your workouts. If you do a little strength training, more higher intensity workouts, your testosterone is increasing at this point before ovulation. So you're going to get the most benefits from that. So this is the time to put some of those plans into action, and especially with those social pieces of the plan, right? Like book those meetings, have brainstorming sessions, get things going. And then the third week of your cycle, so this is from ovulation, which is approximately mid-cycle. It's different for each person. So say day 15 to day 21 of your cycle, if you have a 28-day cycle, this can be likened to the summer, where this is your peak energy, right? You feel like, okay, I'm not as tired. I don't have to sleep as much. You're really completing these projects. You have the energy to give it a final push. And then the week before your period, so when you have PMS, this is like moving back into the winter. So it's the fall period where you're starting to retreat and go within. So ideally you've, you know, finished things off, or you just have a few little things to do during this time to check off your list, but you're really prioritizing rest and self-care and saying no to some things, take things off your plate. You're probably going to want to hide in the car. You're going to want to go into your room and have some quiet time. And this is when you don't want to do like intense exercise too. You want to do more yin yoga, stretching, just gentle movement and walking. So to increase our productivity, like if we try to push too hard during our premenstrual phase or the week before our period, I don't know about you, but when I do, I make more mistakes and then I have to go back and it's twice the amount of work, right? Or I'm like, oh, I can't believe I did that or said that or wrote that. So we want to tap into doing presentations and social activities mid-cycle, more analytical reflection work around your period.
Yeah, it's it sounds sometimes overwhelming, and I can see, like, you know, for me it wasn't really overwhelming because I immediately started noticing this, and like the symptoms for me this time why I started it was for the breast soreness, and I immediately started seeing it go away when I started, you know, aligning specifically my nutrition to it. And then just, I was seeing such a change in my energy week by week. And it was fascinating on how, if I did little tweaks to my schedule, I would just be supporting myself in a whole other way than I ever did before. So yeah, I love that. It's truly fascinating. So then what got me thinking, so when I was learning about all this was, you know, my mom was like, well, I'm in menopause. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? So I was telling her about the moon cycle and how she, if she desires to continue to tap into this, then she can look into the moon cycle. What about our kids? Like, it got me thinking, and I didn't find a lot of information on this, but I thought, okay, well, if we can, you know, the best way to teach is to do. So like, if I'm doing it and I'm eating according to my cycle and I'm living my life, parenting, my work, everything, my exercise according to this, then my daughter will understand what is going on, right? But can we tap into tuning our children to the moon cycle, or at least making them the same cycle as us, whether we're aligned to the moon cycle or not, to help them as they're getting into puberty? To ease those symptoms for them, to balance out their hormones and whatnot? Like, where does that play into the picture?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's always good to be proactive and preventative, right? So number one is, you know, not being afraid to expose them to moonlight. Like if it's a full moon and you're not in the city and it's bright lights and street lights, open up their curtains, right? And allow the moon to shine in them even for part of the night, right? So even getting outside it when it's the full moon, you're not going to get out in the middle of the night, but just exposing yourself to that. I found during the pandemic, I was walking a lot more at night and my cycle did get in sync with the moon cycle. Now I'm a little bit out of phase right now because I'm still walking a lot, but it's not time to run the moon. And so that can make a difference. And then doing first morning sunlight, getting out within the first few hours, most kids do because they're walking to school, but the sun and the moon really helps to regulate our cycle. And even the exposure to, you know, blue light in the day, we need blue light in the day, but as night comes, you know, nearer, we want to switch out to red light bulbs. So you can have red light bulbs in their, you know, in their room for their reading light, for their night light. So that doesn't interfere with our melatonin. So it also supports our natural rhythms as well. So we're kind of mimicking what's happening as the sun's setting and we're not exposed to that bright blue. And that shuts down melatonin. So that can be really valuable. And I love that you're going to mirror kind of the different things to do during different times of the month. And I think kind of narrate and talk about why you're doing that and what you're feeling at different times of the month to normalize it. Like, oh, I feel like my temper is a little bit short right now. I'm due to get my period in a couple of days. I know I need to plan a little bit more alone time or go for that extra walk. whatever it is. I think just narrating that to normalize and get them to kind of understand what could happen at different phases. They might be like, okay, I'm ovulation time. I'm ready to go do that dance class. I want to go see my friends. I'm so excited. So that would be another good strategy as well. But I think, yeah, the exposure to the sun and the moon and just like talking about what's going on is a really good start. They could even do a little journal or just draw pictures of how they feel, you know, at different times of the month when they do get their period. Granted, they're going to be a teen, maybe they don't want to draw pictures, but there's ways you can track it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, today there's lots of apps and things like that that you can work with to help you with that. But yeah, it's interesting because like you say, the education we got around it was like, okay, you have your period, you're going to get it every month and you can wear pads or tampons. And that's about it. Like,
you might cry a little bit. Yeah. Like, you might want to cry or I don't know.
Yeah. I don't
your
even
hormones,
think I got,
right?
Like, I don't even think I got that. I know my mom taught me, which this is really interesting, but she taught me like when you ovulate and what happens and there's higher chance of getting pregnant or whatever. But somehow my sister missed all that education. I don't know why or how, but anyways, yeah. And it was, anyways, speaking of which, like we had like a period party, like we went out for dinner with all of like aunts and cousins and it was like a celebration versus like, I think some people is like, oh no, like I have that.
Yeah, to have like a period party, to see it as a rite of passage, do something, you know, around the full moon or the new moon, just have a special activity like that. I love it.
Okay, so for me, I kind of self-diagnosed and I was like, okay, before I get help, it's just sore breath. Like it can't be, it's not that bad, you know, yet I was like debilitated by it for 3 years, but I kind of self-assessed and I was like, I'm going to try eating this way and like doing the seed cycling for a month. And if nothing changes, then I'm going to reach out to a naturopath for help. But I know a lot of people have way more severe hormonal symptoms or PMS or whatever you want to call them. So what is the best way to assess hormonal levels? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's a very controversial subject, right? Because as I mentioned, you know, from month to month, the hormones are changing. Yes, if you get a hormone test 1 month, the numbers may be different the next month, but it is telling us what's happening that specific month. And you know, that may happen again. So blood test is one way to do it. It only gives you a snapshot in time when you get the blood draw, right? But it's usually good to do, well, it is good if you're going to do the blood test, to do a day 3 female hormone panel. So when day 1 is the first day of flow, to see if, you know, your estrogen's going up, all of those things are going up, and also doing a day 21 progesterone. Again, it's not perfect. You want to do it about 7 days after ovulation because there's a peak in progesterone after ovulation. So that can tell you if you've ovulated. You might miss the day though, right? So you might not ovulate on day 14. So day 21, 7 days later, may not have that peak. A really great way to assess your hormones is through your basal body temperature, right? So taking your temperature every morning, or I have what's called an aura ring that actually checks my temperature. And it tells me when it goes up by 0.5 degrees Celsius. That happens after ovulation. So that can tell you if you're ovulating or not. You can see changes with your cervical mucus, right? You can insert your fingers intravaginally. When you take them out, there's like raw egg white consistency of the cervical mucus, and some people notice their cervix moves up when they're more fertile and the consistency changes. It's more rubbery, like the tip of your nose. So those are really good things to do, like the basal body temperature on a regular basis. I know it can be a pain, like get the Oura Ring if you want and it's done for you. But then there's also testing through, like, no test is perfect, right? So there's also testing through saliva and through urine. There is a urine test that measures all the major hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, and cortisol, as does the blood test, but it also measures all the metabolites or breakdown products of these hormones. And you do a collection about 5 times over a 2-day period. So you're getting like between day 19 and 21 of your cycle. So you're getting a lot more information. The saliva test, we typically use more just for the cortisol on its own, but the urine test also tests cortisol. So I always have a conversation with my patients about what's going on, what's the most you know, what's the best option for them in terms of testing or assessment, but really signs and symptoms can tell us a lot too about what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. And it's usually why we go seek help in the first place. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. This is how we test the hormones, but then what tools do you have as a naturopathic doctors to help us support those hormone imbalances?
Yeah, so definitely. So looking at the body as a whole, right? So we need to look at your nutrition. Are you supporting your hormone production at different phases through different foods and minerals and vitamins? Are you getting enough protein and iron? So that's part of it. We look at liver health, because liver is key to detoxify the hormones. So some people may need a little bit of herbs for liver support. We look at those adrenal glands, stress management, you know, lifestyle changes like getting enough sleep, managing your stress, having outlets for it is going to hugely impact your hormonal system. Like PMS rates are like off the charts during the pandemic, right? So many women are noticing, because stress levels are so high, that there may be more inflammation from infections or vaccines too. But we know that PMS definitely gets worse when stress hormones are thrown off, for sure. I always assess thyroid function, because if you're hypothyroid, that's going to influence the hormones. So I commonly use nutrition, herbal medicine, lifestyle changes, acupuncture, and then I can prescribe bioidentical estrogen and progesterone creams to help manage the symptoms as well, and kind of help with a regular, like helping to normalize the cycle and reduce some of the symptoms.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So a very holistic, supportive approach. Mm-hmm. I know for me, like so many people are like, I can't do that. Or even my partner, he's like, how am I supposed to cook for you when like this week you're eating something different and the next week you're eating? I'm like, I'm just going to send you a chart and just like look at it. You know, I would say, so when I started, like I was really on a mission to get rid of this breast pain. And I also didn't even do it 100%, you know, like I think there's a whole wave of perfectionists out there, especially as moms. We want to be perfect at, you know, everything. And what I discovered is that even though I didn't do this perfectly, right? So whatever approach you take, if you take the herbs or the nutrition and looking at the test and everything, and you desire to do a shift and you're like, this is so overwhelming, I feel like it's going to take over my life. My personal experience was that, like, even though I didn't eat perfectly according to each phase of my cycle, I still received so many of the benefits. Like I would say, like I ate about 50% according to plan, maybe 60, and I received like over 90% of the benefits, because, you know, the breast pain is gone, and it's been almost 4 months now and it hasn't come back, right? So like, what do you have to say about that? Like, that's my own personal experience, but like, do you resonate with that? Like, has this happened for most?
I totally do. Yeah. Cause I see so many people, they come, they want to do something really extreme. Maybe they can follow it for a few weeks and then it's just too much. Right. And they just don't do anything. Small changes have huge impacts, right? So it's figuring out, what are you able to incorporate consistently? What foods do you want to amp up? What foods do you want to reduce? But being consistent, you know, 80% of the time is usually enough for people. Depends, you know, there's obviously more severe disorders where they might need to be a little, I don't want to say aggressive, but have like a little bit more of a protocol they're following, and then kind of ease off after things have shifted for them. But little things add up over time. And some people, like, it's even like, okay, I'm not getting enough carbs right before I get my period. Like, no wonder I'm like have this insatiable hunger and craving for sugar, because we actually need several hundred more calories before our period. And yeah, get that through root vegetables, through berries, right? These are all going to give your body what it needs. And then some people are like, yeah, if I back up, I'll back off the caffeine, I feel so much better, I'm sleeping better, I get less PMS, I'm not feeling anxious as much before my period. So it can be small changes, like, well, cutting it off caffeine for some people, that's not a small change, but reducing it, right? Just getting in movement, just walking every day, that really balances our, you know, reduces stress hormones, boosts our mood, gets the circulation going to your female organs. So all of these things can make a difference. So pick something you enjoy. I like to think of it as adding something in that you like. So what food are you not eating that's going to help you that you really like? What activity, movement, exercise do you like doing? What can you look forward to? You know, adding joy into our life is also so key for our hormones. I think we all have so much that just feels like obligations and another task to do. We don't want to be weighed down by all of that.
Yeah, I love that. And even for me, like what I found is beforehand, my nutrition was the same thing over and over and over again. And it was very boring. But like as the six core basic human needs, the number two need is need for variety, right? So some people can look at this and be like, wow, it's complicated. And at first I was like, whoa, how am I supposed to keep up with this? But now it's like, it's so fun, right? Like, because like, for example, right now, like the phase before my period, it's like what, cucumbers, celeries, hummus, like chickpeas and things like that. And I love those things. So it's like, oh my God, I get to indulge in like the hummus and the cucumbers and everything. And then, so I look, and then the next phase, like I try new foods and like, I'm just adding so much more variety to my life, in my nutrition aspect that I wasn't before. So I actually find it really fun. It's like, okay, well, you know, I get to indulge in these foods and then I take a break from it for a few days, for a few weeks, and then I go back. Breaks up that like, I don't know what to eat for dinner, or I don't know what to do this. And it's just like, I find that it really breaks that up and it adds, and you're getting way more nutrients that way as well.
Yeah, it might feel like a lot at first, but then that becomes like, okay, this week is what I eat. These are the recipes. Next week is what I eat. And even if you think about those 4 weeks as the seasons, right? You want more warming foods when you have your period. You can have more raw foods, ovulation, you know, just after ovulation. So because if it's the summer, you want more raw foods. You can look at kind of what's in season as well, because you're going to get more nutritional bang for your buck. But just listen to your body, right? Are you giving it what it's asking for? Like, I don't know about you, but when I have my period, I'm like, I want like a grass-fed burger right now because I need that iron, right? So, yeah. So also listen to your body. Sometimes it you know, is calling for, you know, junk food, which, you know, there's a time and a place in moderation, but be intentional about what you're eating, I think, is the key. Like, I'm going to have this bowl of ice cream. I'm going to enjoy it and I'm not going to feel guilty, like not deprive yourself and then eat like 20 rice cakes with peanut butter and be like, that was not good.
Yeah, for sure. I've really noticed that what you were saying about like the warming foods and in the winter or whatever. But yeah, like I noticed when I have my period, I'm like freezing all the time. And I'm like, yep, I'm just going to have more soups and stews. And so it makes it easier. And, you know, it helps when mom sends some frozen stuff over that I can just unthaw and eat.
That's perfect. The mother-in-law's always giving us stuff to add to her freezer and then easy to reheat. So I love that.
Yeah, me too. Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. Anything you want to leave our listeners with before we...
Yeah. So I think just getting in tune with your body, right? Freeing up a bit of time and space, whether it's journaling for 2 minutes every day, kind of being aware of where you are in your cycle, when the next full moon is. So I know there's a full moon June 13th, I think it's coming up. Yeah. And then the end of the month, the 28th is the new moon. So just starting to listen to your body and track patterns and see how you feel. And I can also share my menstrual cycle guide with you as well. So I can share the link for that in the show notes too. So you can start to see what things to incorporate at different times of the month and how that resonates with you.
Perfect. Yeah, that would be super helpful. Thank you. Yeah. And I think for me, like the biggest takeaway that I want people to have is that, and that I had when I started, you know, this research, is that PMS and cramping and all these other symptoms, like they're just not normal. We do not have to live with them. We've been told a lie. And that if you have them, don't just be like, oh, well, it is what it is. There's nothing I can do about it. You reach out for help, reach out to a naturopath, reach out to Dr. Lisa here. I've had many friends that have worked with her and have loved their experience and the shifts that happen in their bodies. So, yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Oh, my pleasure.
If you desire guidance from me every week, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and also follow me on Instagram or TikTok. I want to leave you with this quote: great parenting happens when you start controlling yourself and stop controlling your child. parenting is more about reparenting yourself as it is about parenting your child. This is a process. This is a journey, and I am here to guide you one connection at a time.